You're listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. Now back to the show with your host, Lisa.
Welcome. Lisa Leitner here with Don't IEP Alone. If you listened to the episode that preceded this one, talking about behavior, if you didn't, that's fine. I would encourage you to go back and listen, but I'm trying to record these so that they are standalone content in isolation. But I talked about one of the main flaws that I see with FBAs and behavior plans, and that is that they don't really get to the core issues of what kids need that are causing the behaviors. So you definitely want to look at that. But the other thing I want to talk about, because it's April and this is happening a lot, is because everybody's kind of at the end of their rope, right? We are in the home stretch. For most people, spring break is over. For many states, the only hurdle they have to cross at this point is state testing, standardized testing, and then kind of all learning stops and we go to the end of the year. So like people are just out of patience. People are they're worn down. Parents and teachers, everybody's tired. Everybody needs a break. You have a couple of last hurdles to get over. Days are getting longer, but you can see that summer break or the light at the end of the tunnel, the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel. And so kids who have behaviors are being asked to leave school. This may be formal, this may be informal, but if your child is being asked to leave the school building and his peers are not, then your child has been suspended. Your child has been removed from school and his peers were not. So that is a suspension because, you know, a lot of parents, no, we're not suspending him. He's just having a really bad day. So it'd probably be best if you came and got him. No, that's not what we do here. Now, let me add to that, that I do believe, unfortunately, with all my heart, that many kids are being traumatized at school. And because they don't have the coping mechanisms to process this information, because they don't have the resilience, right? Why aren't kids more resilient today? Like, you know what? You can scream that from the mountaintop, but unless you give a child skills and coping mechanisms and teach them how to be resilient, it doesn't just appear. And how about this? How about we make school a place where they don't have to be so goddamn resilient all the time? How about that? Why does a child need a coat of armor to survive a school day? What if we made it more inviting, more comforting? What if school was a safe space and they didn't need to be resilient? How about that? So you know your kid, right? And I get that this is very stressful for many parents who don't have job flexibility to leave during the school day and go get their kid, right? And you're kind of trapped in this. Am I forced to leave my child in a situation that might further traumatize them, might make the long-term situation worse if I leave them there during the school day? Or do I go get them? And then in which case you are telling them, you know, hey, if you're having a rough day, you just act out like this and then mom or dad will come get you and then you can go home and feel safe again. It's a complex situation, and if you take away anything from these two podcast episodes, please take away that I know in the moment, because I've been in the moment myself with clients, with my own child, in the moment you just kind of react and you do whatever it takes in the moment to make the moment better. And I'm inviting everybody and encouraging everybody to take a step back, take a deep breath and say, okay, this situation is happening, but let's look at the big picture. Let's look at the long term and what does this child need and what is best for them. I read a statistic recently that said only 14% of adults now are doing the remote working thing. So while it feels like everybody's working from home, it's really not. Only 14% of employers who are fully embracing this work from home thing. So working from home and homeschooling and doing a cyber school next to your child, you know, you work and you're sitting next to them while they do school during the day, that isn't a feasible option for a lot of people, right? We only have 14% of employers embracing this work from home thing. So the rest of us kind of have to figure this out, right? And say, well, okay, so 85% of us have to figure out what we're going to do because I can't keep leaving my job. And some of you work in jobs where it's not just office work that, okay, I'm going to take 2 hours off now and I'll just complete this work later. Like sometimes you're dealing with people that, you know, you have to be there. You know, you're a dental hygienist and you have to be there in that moment, a nurse, whatever, a teacher, right? So it is a complex issue. I think that IEP teams don't engage kids enough and ask them what's going on. I feel like we spend a lot of time talking above them and not to them and saying, hey, this is what's happening. Can you tell me what's going on? Can you tell me, do you remember how you felt in that moment? Do you remember what you were thinking about before you did this? Right? And kind of engaging them in that process and engaging them in the solutions. What do you think we could do to make you feel better in the classroom? What do you think mom and dad and Mrs. Teacher could do so that this doesn't happen again? Again, I think IEP teams are constantly talking above kids and around kids and not with kids. And you'd be surprised, even at the preschool and kindergarten level, how insightful some kids can be, okay? You know, it might be a sensory issue. It might be a processing issue. It might be, even if it's something as simple as, well, I don't like it here. I don't like this class. I don't like this school. Okay, you know, and you can kind of dig deeper. That doesn't mean that this is all going to happen in one conversation, but we need to take a step back and engage the kid and look at the big picture. And okay, so on Wednesday, they told you, I don't like this school. So Thursday on the drive home, you say something like, hey, you know, yesterday you told me you don't like school. What don't you like about it? Or what do you like about it? Right? And you want to try to build off the successes that are happening because they are happening. Not every moment of every day is a failure for our kids. They do have moments of success. Okay. And you want to build off of those and learn from whatever it is that is distressing them. But removing them from the classroom is a knee-jerk reaction for both parents and teachers, right? You just want to end the pain and suffering in that moment by taking the child home. And it's just not sustainable, right? Like, what are we going to do? We're just going to keep sending kids home until everybody's home? Like, because it's not going to be long before the kid who doesn't even have any learning disabilities or doesn't have an IEP sees this happening and is like, hey, if I'm just having a shitty day and I don't feel like being here, all I have to do is that. And they send the kid home, right? So it's just not a sustainable practice for the long-term success of any child or the classroom. So here's, you know, the second part of this, I want to address what to do if this is happening to you. First of all, again, you have to know your kid and you have to know, you know, I would never want my kid to be left in a situation where he was really, really struggling and suffering and, you know, maybe being traumatized in the classroom. So you have to make the decision if you're going to go get the child or not. You also have to make sure that, you know, restraint and seclusion is not illegal. Most states still allow it. So all these cries, oh, they can't do that. They can't do that. But you want to make sure that that isn't happening to your child, that they're not like, okay, well, mom won't come get him. But so then we're going to put him in a broom closet with a table and some Legos for the rest of the day. Right. So you want to make sure that that's not happening. And again, engage your child in solutions. Like, why did he feel that way? What can you add to the IEP? What needs are not being met that can prevent this behavior? And that might also include some self-advocacy skills. Asking for help is a self-advocacy skill. Asking for a sensory break is a self-advocacy skill. And I see a lot of accommodations on IEPs that are, they need to be worded differently, because when you put on a child's IEP that they will have access to the sensory room when needed, and then, you know, 6 weeks of nonsense goes by and I'm in an IEP meeting and you look at the IEP and it says, well, you know, we'll have access. Well, he had access, and because the team looks at you and they go, well, you never asked. Well, he may not have the skill set to ask. He may not have the skill set to self-evaluate and know when they're becoming dysregulated. And then when they start to become dysregulated, that's kind of when it all really starts to go out the window. So I'm sorry that teachers are overworked. I am sorry that teachers are stretched to the absolute limit right now. I know you are. But my job is not to advocate for teachers' unions. That's why you have teachers' unions. You need to work on that. My job is to advocate for this child. And so if you need to be identifying and acknowledging the kids in your classroom throughout the day who are becoming dysregulated and prompt them to go take a sensory break, I'm sorry if that is one more thing on your to-do list when you feel like you really can't handle one more thing on your to-do list, but you can advocate for yourself. These kids can't. And so that's what I'm here for, is I'm here to help these parents, because we can't just keep sending them home. That helps you in the moment, but in the long term, it's only making the situation worse. And I think you know it and I know it, but it's just a very reactionary measure to, well, we'll just send them home. Okay. I'm sorry that it's extra work to, again, you know, you're teaching a class and we're already asking you to do more with less, and you have a giant class size, and we're asking you to do differentiated instruction and everything else. And you're like, oh my God. And now I got to keep my eye on this kid, and this kid to make sure that they're not about to blow like a volcano. Yeah, we are asking you to do that. And I'm sorry if that puts more pressure on you. Then you need to self-advocate. Okay. We are stronger together. We can self-advocate together. We are on the same team. We do want schools to be funded adequately and staffed adequately, so this doesn't all fall on teachers. And we need to do that together. So just putting it back on the parent and like, well, just come get your kid, that's not helpful. It's only helpful in that immediate moment for that afternoon. Okay. Parents, if you do decide to go get your child, especially if you've been asking to change the IEP and those things have not been happening, if you've been asking for an FBA and you're not getting one, if you think your IEP needs work, if you need the behavior plan needs work, when you go to get your child in these situations, you know, they almost always ask you to sign them out in the main office. I want you to sign them out and put on that sign-out sheet, I was asked to come get my child because of, and put it right there. That is just going to be another piece of documentation and data that you have. I teach a lot about data and documentation in my online training, because those incidents can be very helpful. You know, you're asking and asking and asking for something, and let's say you end up in mediation, you're going to ask for all those sign-in sheets. And you know what? You come to mediation with 6 or 7 incidents of, I was asked to come get my child. How's the school going to sit there and say, oh, well, no, the behavior plan doesn't need work? Okay, those are the types of things you need to document. If they are being suspended, well, even if they're not, but if they are being suspended, especially then you need to read your procedural safeguards. Nobody reads them. It's a boring book. I get it. But you need to read your procedural safeguards, not just sign the sheet every year at the meeting that you've received them, but read them and heed them so that you know what you're entitled to as it pertains to discipline. It will all be spelled out as far as suspensions and what to expect, because there are all kinds of little quirks. Like Pennsylvania has weird little quirks about suspensions, especially when it comes to intellectually disabled people and so on. Okay, you want to read them so that you're not taken advantage of, and you know that what you're entitled to as far as a manifestation hearing and so on. Read everything you can on my site about behavior. I think at this point there's at least a dozen posts about it, because you really have to, you know, you just really have to dig in. I don't know how else to say it other than the parents who do not engage in the process and really learn it are going to be taken advantage of. Schools absolutely can tell who knows their rights and who doesn't. They're going to take shortcuts, and your child will be left behind if you don't engage in the process. And behavior is a big frog to eat, right? I'm sorry that you and I have to know this for our kids. I'm sorry that these are the cards that we were dealt, that we have to deal with the IEP process when most of us would rather do anything but we must. So if you're going to do something, do it well and really engage in this IEP process so that your child doesn't get left behind, because they will get left behind if you don't engage, if you don't learn everything about IEPs and behavior plans and your rights and all of it. you're going to struggle with this scenario. I mean, and I've seen this kind of stuff with kids being asked to leave the classroom. I mean, it doesn't get better. Know that. These situations do not resolve on their own. So if you're thinking like, oh, well, if I can just, you know, maybe get through this school year, next school year will be better. These situations very rarely resolve on their own. They're just going to get worse with a new teacher, a new building, more things, right? The content is getting more complex as kids get age. So that puts more demands on them. Their social demands increase and on and on and on. So I have a ton of information on my site. Please read it. Please consider my training. Please consider the IEP toolkit. All of that information is on my site and I will put it in the show notes as well. But, you know, I know that you're not alone. I'm hearing from lots and lots of parents this time of year, because of the time of year, because everybody's worn down, that this kind of stuff is happening. So you're not alone. Hang in there. And it does get better, right? It does get better. If you really tackle this head on and say, I'm going to learn this, I'm going to know my rights, and I'm going to use the IEP process to my advantage and to get my child's needs met, it will get better. Okay. All right. That's all I have for today. I'm sorry if it was a little rambly. That's just kind of how I'm feeling this week. And I will talk to you all next week.
Thank you for listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. We're so glad you've joined us and would love to connect with you outside of the show. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. From self-care tips to common IEP mistakes, there's even more to explore. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast and subscribe to never miss an episode. Until next time, don't IEP alone, and you don't have to.